Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2018. Lecture 23, delivered on April 18, 2018. The title of this lecture is Maintaining Optimal Capital Structure.
Today, Maintaining Optimal Capital Structure. Before I begin, just a very brief look at the markets. Make sure that the world is not falling apart on us quite yet. Yes, we'll wait for the projector to come on. There it is. Okay. And as usual, good day or bad day? No, you. Good day or bad day? Or just both. It's actually a really quiet day. A up and down. You didn't have a lot of movement either way. It's one of those, let's wait and see what happens next kind of days. Nothing awful happened, but at the same time, nothing extraordinary happened. We do have significant problems, obviously. We are engaging, we're still getting ready for a serious trade war. China announced 179% tariffs on American sorghum. And it seems that the agriculture sector is being hit pretty hard with the tariffs, along with some other sectors, obviously. But this is one of the backbones of the American economy. Our agriculture has a huge market in China that is just essentially going to get hit really badly. But that's already been the market's already reflected that a few days ago. And there's no really big good news, although it's kind of interesting that you'll see one day that you did have, there was the S&P 500, there was the Dow, and finally, there was the NASDAQ. You notice that in all three of the markets, there was a sell-off in the afternoon. In the later afternoon, you see all of them have that slide downward. That tends to tell us that the markets were, these sectors or these indices were reinforcing each other's opinion or perspective that there was some news near the end of the day that tended to tame any enthusiasm. Sometimes you have to look at the overnight markets to be sure of this, but it's clear that we might be heading into a down day tomorrow. We'll just have to see what the overnight markets look like to see what futures prices do on these indices. Now, let me just pull this one up here. Okay, do you remember what the spread was on Wednesday between the 7 and the 10-year? Do you remember what the spread was?
5 or 6.
5, yeah, it was 5. Okay, it had gone from 7 to 6, and then it had floated at 5. Well, let's have a look here at where we stand right now. Go back up here to see. Yeah, there's the 7 and the 10. There they are. What's the spread today? What did the spread close at today?
4.
Ow. We are approaching the tipping point. It's getting there. It's slow, but it is, that's 4 points from an inversion. So it's, like I said, it drifts. It might come back up a little, but you can see this overall trend that it's coming down. And eventually that 7-year will probably make it above, a notch above the 10-year, and that's when you call the recession 6 months out. And so, yeah.
When it does invert, if you were managing capital, what would you do? How would you
raise it? I would be calm, because the inversion is not going to cause an instant problem. But it is a signal that it is time to start seriously getting ready to move your portfolio toward a more defensive position. At your next window, you would probably do it. There's no reason to panic at that point, because you've still got two to three quarters to pull in. And you can do it gracefully, and if you're in mutual funds, well, you would say, all right, at the next window, I'm probably going to move to a defensive, move money out of my equity funds and move it toward my bond funds, and maybe increase my cash by 5%. 5% of that money coming out of my equity funds, I'd move to cash. In other words, a treasury mutual fund, and then the remainder I'd move to bonds. And at this point, we can't say whether it's going to be a really bad recession or a long recession. So you don't go crazy. But as information comes in, if it looks, as other numbers begin to tell us more about the profile, the structure of the recession, then we could become more defensive if it looks like it's going to be a really bad one. Or we could hold our position where it is. In other words, don't get radical. Don't panic. Don't ever let any kind of problem make you rout, make you run and panic and make decisions that are bad. That's how you lose. And I'm teaching you how to know far enough in advance to be prepared for it, how to set yourself up with a structure of a three mutual fund portfolio or a three ETF portfolio, and then how to know far enough in advance so that your planning is careful and it's not done in haste or with inadequate information. Well, that's actually a good question. I hadn't been meaning to get a chance to say that, though. But as you can see, we did indeed. We went from 7. Oh, there was a 5. There was a 5. And there was another 5, and there was a 5, and now we're at 4. The best I can do to give you some idea that I do know what I'm doing in this is to show you this process and to show you that, yeah, as we've gone through this semester, we've been doing this the whole semester, you're seeing what I was telling you would happen, that drift toward inversion. It won't happen fast, but it's coming. So that gives you an idea of where we stand right now. I'm going to go into go ahead, talk.
Yeah, I have a question. So is there like a specific reason why you think the inversion's happening?
Yeah, we're going into a recession. It's terrifying. Why does this recession happen? Okay. I want you to imagine it is ancient times. You are in the Paleolithic. You live in a lush, semi-tropical environment. Very comfortable. There's plenty to eat. You don't even have to kill a lot of animals. There's coconuts, bananas, and other high-fiber, high-vitamin C nutritional products. Now, every day, you can just wander out. Yep, I think I'll pick me a banana and eat. Walking around. Very comfortable, okay? And I think maybe next year I'm going to plant some orange trees over there. I like orange juice. And maybe in a couple of years, we'll get some grapes going so we can have some wine and, you know, get down to some real Paleolithic partying. You know, party like cavemen. Yeah. Okay, you're making plans for the future. Yeah, and I think I'll find me a wife and maybe have a few kids and, you know, maybe buy myself a car maybe in 5-10 years. Maybe go to Paleo Illinois State University, get a degree. Okay, the point there being that you're planning long term, okay? Long bond investments. Okay, now it begins to get cold, and there's winds. and you hear sounds at night. And they have kind of a lisp. Oh, I know what that is. That's saber-toothed tigers, because they can't really say S. As they, okay. Now, do you wander out every morning, yep, looking forward to the future, or do you scurry out and grab things and run back in to your warm cave? You're probably going to do more things that are short-term. In other words, you're going to move out of long bonds, and as you sell them, the price goes down and the yields go a little bit, but you're also going to buy in to the shorter stuff. Okay, that's the whole idea here. I don't know how the hell I came up with that one, but it kind of worked, sort of. Yeah, everyone's like writing in their notes, wait, what? Okay. Now, let me tell you about capital structure a little more. Now, with respect to capital structure, when you finance projects, you have several sources of capital for projects. Now, on the one hand, of course, the first thing that you might think of for paying, for financing a project would be your earnings, net of dividends. That would be the first place you would go. Those earnings belong to the shareholders. So that is a kind of equity. So the most readily available way to finance a project would be through internally generated equity. Internally generated equity. Now you remember that the cost of internally generated equity, and I'll put that as R sub B, is D1 over P0 plus G, the dividend one period out. Now, of course, this is for companies that have a stable growth of a regular dividend, and it gets a little more complicated. But if you don't have earnings, the only other way that equity could be used would be what we call externally generated equity. Now, the formula for the cost of externally generated equity, and I'll put that as R sub N, N for new, you'd sell more common stock. And the cost of that is D1 over P0, but you don't get, if you sell common stock, you don't get the P0, you get minus the float that you have to pay the brokers. Yeah.
So what would be an example for externally?
For externally? An offering of stock. You sell stock, that's how we're going to finance this project, by selling stock. Well, that's externally generated equity, but you would first have to have blown through. You would not do this kind of, you wouldn't sell stock to raise money unless you had run out of earnings to raise money. And this one is more expensive than this one because you don't get the whole P0. You offer stock at $50. You're going to pay the brokers money. So this denominator is not going to be $50. It's going to be $50 minus, let's say, $6 per share that you pay the brokers. So that denominator is going to be smaller, so the whole R sub N is going to be bigger than R sub E. But these two together are the way that you deal in equity. This is how you finance with equity. But then there's also debt. And you remember that the cost, after-tax cost of debt, is the before cost tax of debt times 1 minus the corporation's tax rate, because you get to write off the interest. You don't get to write off dividends. So that right there makes debt pretty cheap, comparatively speaking. But the important point here that I'm trying to get to is that you can't just choose which of these ways. Because if you could just choose which of these ways, well, you'd always choose debt. Because it's the cheapest form of capital. But unfortunately, if you always use debt to finance capital projects, you would make a big mistake. You would cause an error in your corporation. You would cause something disastrous to happen. And now, I'm going to ask my volunteers to meet me out in the hallway. Yes. You're going to be equity. You, madam, are going to be debt. We need to finance a $1 project. It's going to be a $1 project. No. These are my finance people. Financiers. Okay, I'll be back in a moment. Horse head. And the ear loops are, you can find those. So. You ready? This firm has an optimal capital structure that is 75% equity and 25% debt. And this firm is that farmer right there who wants to buy two horses for a cost of $1. I'm almost blacking out. Okay. You see, I could just borrow a dollar. It's the cheapest way to do this. But she is equity. So what I'm going to have to do is take 75 cents from her. Farmer, you need a dollar. Equity will be 75 cents. Nope. Nah, Dad, don't. I know you farmers. Okay. And the debt is 25%. So he's going to have the dollar. No, go ahead. No, just take the quarter. Now, what do you got in your hand?
$1. So you're mine now? You're my horse?
Yes! Because.
Oh, God, I've got bad breath. Okay.
Come back over here. You see, what has happened has been that he now has his project underway. He has how much money?
$1.
Okay, so the $1... That horse gets 75 cents. Give the horses. And now he belongs to you. Now give me my 25 cents. And now I belong to you. And he has maintained the optimal capital structure of the company. And there's only one question left.
Why did he get 75 cents and I get only 25 cents?
I don't know.
Do you know why? Because I am a quarter horse.
Okay.
And that, I guarantee you, will never forget for the rest of your days. That's
the end of that demonstration. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. I'm here all night, folks. And I'm going to give you a quiz and then have you on your way.